And welcome to the Dark Side of Soul podcast. This is Joe.
This is Amused. Sean.
Amused. Thank you for joining us today. You know what? We were going to continue our mysterious deaths from last week, but from last time, but I really kind of want to do something a little less depressing.
We'll get back to it.
And it's the time of year. I'm a lot of us are holed away, and it's the time of year to go to amusement parks if you're into that. And even in Korea, where the amusement parks are open, we're not going because there's a scale of COVID-19. Contagiousness, and they said like amusement park is one of the worst places you can go to.
Yeah,
during sure. this.
Yeah.
So I thought we'd just talk about amusement parks because I kind of really want to go. I'll admit I'm an amusement park fanatic on top of everything else. When I was 6 years old, my mother had returned from Disney World, and she brought back the guide, the map for the park. And I would study this map, and I determined from there I wanted to build my own amusement park, oh, yeah. my own theme park. I would build them out of Legos. I would take giant poster paper, and draw elaborate maps of what my planned theme park would be. And this is, you know. Other kids are playing with dinosaurs and G.I. Joes, and I'm designing my theme park. And I even had cartoon characters to go with it. So since then, I've been fascinated mostly with I'm fascinated with the theming, because a good theme park is like good theater. The point is, I'm just really obsessed with the engineering and the thought that goes into a good theme park design.
Did you ever play Roller Coaster Tycoon?
Yeah, there was another one before that called Theme Park, and that I really liked.
Okay,
yeah,
right on.
Yeah.
What was the theme park that you went to most as a kid? Was there anything around where you grew up?
I didn't really get to go much. This is how I was with musical theater too. Is I'm a fan of something I didn't get to go to much. I loved musical theater too, but I always had to just listen to the soundtracks. My little sister, because she had active babysitting jobs, she did babysitting gigs where they took her to Disney World, and she goes to Disney World. She's a season pass member, and she's always at Disney. As for me, I went to Disney. I've only been to Disney twice. I've been to one in 1983 and in 2019, even though I'm very obsessed with Disney parks.
2019. Oh, you went to the one in Hong Kong?
Yeah, I went to Hong Kong.
When you were in Hong Kong, yeah.
Okay. And it was great. I was so happy. But it's because of the details. I was so much into all the little details, hidden details in the park. It's fascinating to me.
Yeah, and I think it's a great thing to talk about now, because I think there's a quintessential nature of the theme park is summer vacation. Mm-hmm. Summertime. When I think of theme parks, I just think of summer. They have a mood about them. They're part of the summer vacation kind of thing.
But I just did watch a video about a guy. This guy, it's a YouTube channel all about theme parks. He goes to theme parks all around the world. And last year he went to like 20 theme parks in Japan. Oh, and wow. Talked about how they're not really that well attended. That some of the people said it's because of summer, that Japanese don't go to theme parks that much in summer. Didn't know that. But also that there was one of the worst roller coaster accidents in the world happened in a Japanese theme park. I think 2009. And after that, people really weren't going to Japanese theme parks. But that's not what we're talking about in Japan. We're going to talk about that in Korea.
Yeah.
Wow, that was a segue.
Swift. Yeah. When I was really young, I lived in a place called Brampton, which is in Ontario. So the closest theme park was Canada's Wonderland, which I'm pretty sure is the biggest theme park
in Canada.
Probably one of the biggest in North America, I'd imagine. It's mostly a roller coaster park. It's roller coasters everywhere. Great. But in Newfoundland, when I was really young, we had the Trinity Train Loop amusement. I think that's what it was called.
Uh-huh.
And it's now
three loops, or it's really religious.
Well, Trinity Loop is an area in Newfoundland, yeah. And it's the Trinity. So
Yeah.
So this is area the area is called the Trinity Loop.
Okay.
And so the park was named after the area.
If they don't have a three loop roller coaster, that's nuts.
Yeah, I know. It was a kids park. There was nothing like that. Okay. Really tiny Newfoundland budget.
Wasted opportunity.
Yeah. So, but now it's abandoned. It's an abandoned park, and it's pretty popular among legend trippers. People want to travel there, and you know, people who visit abandoned amusement parks.
You mentioned it. Yeah, I didn't answer your question before. Yeah, the main park we used to go to is now abandoned. That's Opryland in Nashville.
Okay,
it closed. But then I went to Six Flags Over Georgia a lot, especially as a teenager. I could walk through that park with my eyes closed. I know where everything was in that park because my boarding school in Chattanooga, we always took trips down to Six Flags. And then I used to work at a camp at the park, at the school, and they were always taking field trips to the park. So I was always at Six Flags in Atlanta. Nice. Yeah, which I like. Yeah. I have a special, and you know what? Six Flags is not a well-themed park. It technically has different lands, but they're not well defined.
Right. Yeah. And then when I was a teenager, the only thing we really had that was popular was once a year, the fair would come through in the town where I went to high school, Harbor Grace.
Of course, fairs. I miss county fairs.
Yeah. So the fun fairs, we called it the fall fair. It's Thomas Amusements. And I think they travel all around at least Eastern Canada.
And that was always a sign that fall was here. Fall was coming.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was right at the beginning of the school year.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they'd set up like maybe end of September, early October.
Yeah. And well, for us, it was early September. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I remember it's like after the first week of school, the school starts dispersing all these coupons to go to the fair. We're so excited. Oh, really? Yeah.
Our school wasn't that cool. Yeah, that was always a lot of fun. The fair, all those rides. And it'd be up for just like a week maybe. And then it'd be taken down. They'd move somewhere else.
I think it was 2 weeks. Yeah. And I'm sure if I go back there as an adult, that whole childhood would be demolished. Looking at it with adult eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. And that's an interesting...
I think as an adult, I'd be more interested in the food and the exhibits than I would the rides.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think too, like the idea of your childhood being demolished, that kind of lends itself to just talking about abandoned parks too.
Yeah.
The parks are literally demolished. They're abandoned and it's forgotten about.
So Korea surprisingly has a lot of tiny amusement parks.
It doesn't. There's one not far from me.
I've been to that one. Yeah. It also has a carp.
Yeah. The carp lake. Yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
And a big campground. It's a nice little spot just for little kids. I don't know how well they're doing this year with the virus, but we'd go and we'd camp a couple times a year there.
What I liked about it was they try to do the Disney thing with Korean folklore.
And some of the rides. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Especially the entrance when you're walking through the gate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Korea has dozens of these tiny little amusement parks, and a bunch of them are abandoned. And probably the most well-known abandoned amusement park is Yongma Land, and it's in Seoul, just right on the northeast, kind of on the outskirts a little bit. Okay. I can't remember, you can get there by subway. And I think
where can't you get by Subway?
Yeah, really. And I think from the station, I can't remember the station. We can write it maybe in the show notes.
Chungnyeongni.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's in Chungnyeongni.
Okay. That's in that general direction, northeast.
Yeah, but I think it's farther on the outskirts than that.
That's like in the neutral zone.
Yeah. I don't even know if it's technically in Seoul. I'm not sure. But it was a park. It's popular now because people it's being advertised as a abandoned park. Yeah, nonsense. Don't waste your money for anyone listening who wants to go visit an abandoned amusement park in Korea. You'll see Yongma Land. It's all over the internet. Creepy amusement park in Seoul. You have to pay to get in. Nothing that is that's abandoned has an entry fee. So the people who own it now, it's like 10,000 won to get in. It's nuts. And they sell like snacks and drinks and stuff at the main gate. Vending machines and stuff. You just go and you walk around. That's it.
I wonder if that's the park that's sometimes used in K-pop videos.
Probably, yeah. So, I think actually there was a video film there, a K-pop video film there, maybe last year.
Uh-huh.
Or a year and a half, 2 years ago. And after that, they've increased the price, maybe not for admission, but they've increased the price for rental. Like if you want to rent the park out for a day or two, they've increased the price. I was contacted a little while ago from a guy named Joey Kroner. Joey runs Dice Latte in Seoul. It's a board game and a comic book, board game cafe and a comic book shop.
Mm-hmm.
He contacted me and said, do you know a good place in Seoul where we can have a big... like a zombie games. What are these events? I can't remember what they're called, where people cosplay and they play out a script. And they're doing one. I can't remember what those things are called.
That's called a play.
Yeah. But not with an audience. You just do it with the people who are there. It's a massive thing.
That's called a bad play.
A bad play. Right. A play with no audience. But anyway, there's these people in the States, they were traveling the world and they're holding these events. And they wanted a place to have this zombie event in Seoul.
Okay.
And so they found Yongma Land. And so, of course, it's listed all over the internet as an abandoned amusement park. They contacted the guy and the guy said they had to pay 1 million won a day. Wait a sec. Yeah, no, or something ridiculous like that. And maybe it was even more. I think it was.
Do you get to have the whole park to yourself, like the Griswolds did?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, Wally World. Sorry, folks, park's closed.
Wow, that's a good John Candy impression.
Moose up front should have told you. I love John Candy.
I love John Candy.
It's something ridiculous. Some price. They've upped the price since this K-pop video was shot there, whenever it was in the last couple of years. And so they said, we can't afford that. And so they know Joey, and Joey contacted me and said, do you know a place where they can go for cheap or free? And I said, yeah, maybe. So I recommended a couple places, but it all got canceled anyway because of coronavirus. It was supposed to be this spring past.
That's irony.
So
a zombie apocalypse is canceled because of coronavirus.
Sorry, everyone.
We just keep writing new verses to Alanis Morissette, you know.
Right. So that's probably the most well-known, especially in the last couple of years, most well-known abandoned park that's not actually abandoned. So I don't recommend anyone go there. There's nothing there. It's not abandoned. People own it and they charge you to get in. Save your money. But an actual abandoned park is called Okpo Land. And this is down near Gajedo.
That's on the southern coast.
Way down off the southern coast. Yeah, near Tonggyeong and places like that. Very far from Seoul. So in the 90s, the Okpo Land was there. A lot of stories that I've read about it suggest that it was the most popular amusement park in Asia at the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, well, I don't know what amusement parks were like in the 90s, but how could an amusement park near Gwaje in the one of the most remote parts of Korea,
that's
still today a kind of a chore to get to, but certainly a chore in the 1990s to get to, how could that have been the most popular amusement park in Asia? I just don't believe that.
It's like, who wants to go to Orlando?
Okay. No, I don't. Yeah.
No, I'm sure.
Sorry to anyone from Orlando.
Well, there goes our whole audience from Orlando.
Orlando.
Thanks a lot.
I'm fine with that. So this park, it was popular anyway, if not among Asians all across the continent, but among the people who lived nearby. And then certain accidents allegedly happened there. An accident happened at some point in the mid 90s with a ride that was called, or it's being called now, the Duck Train. So it was a ride that was on a rail. So it was a train, and all the cars were shaped like ducks, yellow, like a rubber duckies that you play with in a bathtub. And so it was a kid's ride, but pretty high off the ground. And apparently it derailed one day. And it hit someone on the ground or something like that, and they died. Mm. And then a couple of years later, in 1999, it derailed again, and a young girl fell from the train as it was pulling out of the station. It derailed. She fell from the cart, and she hit the ground, and she died. And then after that, allegedly, the owner of the park disappeared mysteriously. He was never found again. Mm. And the park then just closed, and it's been abandoned ever since.
Wow.
And it's, you know, one of the most popular places to visit in Korea for abandoned places. The only problem with the story is that there's no evidence for any of it. It's very likely not true. None of it. It's just an urban legend. But it's a damn good one. It's a fun one.
Is the Duck Train still there?
Now, the Duck Train is still there. And in the station, from the station, there is one of the cars from the Duck Train hanging off of the rail. And it said that that's the car where the girl fell from. And so it was just left there like that. That's part of the legend as well. And it's also said that in that space, around the bottom of the, probably the steps that would lead up to the train itself, how you'd get on the Duck Train, below where the cart is off of the rail, there's a perpetual cold spot, and it's said that that's the girl's ghost, and she's haunting the exact place where she died. So it's a great urban legend. It has all of the ingredients of an urban legend. People say that they know someone who went there, and they felt this presence of a ghost, or someone knew someone who had been there in the 90s and saw the train derail. As all the recipes of an urban legend. But like all urban legends, there's no evidence for any of it. So it's a fantastic story. It's great for a bit of fun to talk about. It's a fun place to visit because it actually is abandoned. The stories behind it are very likely untrue. Mm. So unfortunately, it's still being perpetuated on the internet that all that actually happened, which is unfortunate because it's talking about the deaths of two people and one of them being a little girl. Yeah. And it just didn't happen. There's no evidence for it. But
people still feel the cold spot like they do on some parts of our tour.
That's right.
Which we do run.
We're still running.
Call the Dark Side of Soul Ghost Walk.
If you're still with us.
At darksideofsoul.com, you can book a tour with us. And our bookings are picking up again. COVID, we're COVID-19 safe, and people are starting to learn that we are. So bookings are starting. We're getting nibbles again.
Yeah. So what I think actually happened with the park There's two things that I want to say first that I want to comment on. The first one I think actually happened in the park, and the idea that the owner disappeared mysteriously and was never found again.
Went off to the Philippines.
Yeah. You hear that kind of thing about abandoned places a lot. Gongjiam, the abandoned, former abandoned psychiatric hospital, south of Seoul. Part of the urban legend surrounding that was that the owner, the psychiatrist who ran the place, he was performing experiments on patients. And then when they were, it was all becoming strange and people were calling the police to go check the place out. He took off and he had all of the staff either paid off or murdered, whichever version of the legend you hear. And he disappeared. And allegedly he went to the States and he was never heard from again. So you hear that kind of thing a lot with these abandoned places. Where its abandonment just goes into the realm of contemporary legend. So Okpoland is the same. The owner suddenly disappeared. But what I actually think happened, the timing for the park's closure coincides with the Asian financial crisis. It's very, very likely it shut down because being so far away and no one having any money, no one was going there. They weren't able to operate the park, so it shut down. They just left it. And the idea, like that, the car that's hanging from the rail and things like that, people can come up with whatever reason for that they want. Mm. It's part of the fun. But I do recommend visiting there, Okpoland.
If you're able to get all the way down the Goje.
Yeah.
But are there any deaths at amusement parks that were true?
Oh yeah. There are several accidents going way back that I know of. there's at least some, like from 2007 to around 2010 at Everland. There was a woman who
Everland
of all places, there was a ride there called Magic Battle, and she got on the ride and decided just before it started that she didn't want to take it. So she got off. And the Magic Battle ride is kind of like a swinging barrel. I don't even know if they still have that down there.
Yeah, I don't remember it last time, but I think I remember it the first time I went.
Yeah. Okay. So she decided to get off. And when she got off, the operator didn't check to see if the track was clear. And he started operating the ride, and she got struck by the ride itself. Mm. It broke her neck, and she died. And this all happened about a week after Lotte World had to shut down for months because of lax safety regulations. So they had to renovate a bunch of their rides. They had to bring everything up to snuff.
We had a string of just neglect disasters. This is leading up to the ferry disaster.
Pretty much. Yeah, it's all linked to that.
We had so many disasters happening. I mean, Sangpoom department store in the 90s, which we will do an episode on one day.
Yes.
But I remember this big string of avoidable accidents, all because of laissez-faire safety.
Yeah. And probably like poorly trained operators as well. Like, you should always check to make sure that tracks are clear and, you know, there's no one in the way. You never know if someone's going to try to jump off the ride. So training is probably a major thing. Yeah. The most recent accident that I know of happened in last summer. We're almost coming up on a year ago. This happened. It was August 2019. It was at eWorld, which is down in Daegu. And a part-time operator in his early 20s was operating a roller coaster. And for some reason, he got his legs stuck in the roller coaster. But the roller coaster started to move, and it ripped his leg off from the knee down.
Oh, my God.
From the knee down, yeah. Poor kid lost his knee. Lost half of his leg. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That was just a year ago. Yeah. August 2019. So accidents still happen. And a lot of it could be safety, and a lot of it could be poor training, poor education for the operators. You know, remember, when you're going on these rides, you're putting your faith not only in the physics that allows these rides to operate, but the engineering that puts them all together and the training of the operators.
Yeah.
There's three factors you have zero control over that you're putting your faith in. But that's part of the excitement as well, I suppose.
A bit. I mean, I've ridden the big roller coaster at Soul Land, and I don't think I can do it again because my big ass, I am too big for that coaster, and my knees are up to my cheeks when I'm riding it.
Oh my God.
It's like,
it's no fun.
Yeah. It's like, I'm little, not there's safe. Not, this isn't safe.
Yeah.
Not, only yeah. It's not the seatbelt keeping me in. It's because my body's stuck in the car.
It's like, you're like in a Japanese bathtub.
Yeah.
In a hotel, Japanese hotel yeah. bathtub.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jammed in there. Yeah. So anyway, a lot of these parks still have accidents, as recently as a year ago.
Uh-huh. So. Scary, because I was reading about when I saw that video about the Japanese parks. It was just one park, and it was an axle broke on a roller coaster. And after that, the Japanese public just did not trust any amusement park, except for the big foreign brands like Universal and Disney.
Interesting.
Huh. They weren't really into the homegrown amusement parks that much. But in Korea, it takes a lot of disasters to happen before anyone does.
What ifs?
Yeah. So I want to talk about. It's something just close to my heart for some reason. Is Seoul Grand Park? Mm-hmm. I used to live next to it, and it's just this weird place outside. It's south of Seoul. It's it is part of Seoul because the Seoul government does control it a bit, but it's in Gwacheon. Mm-hmm. If you go on the number 4 line, which runs north and south, it's just right south of Sadang, which I consider the southern border of Seoul proper. And it's just this land in between. It's in this valley between Gwaneksan and Cheonggyesan mountains. And I've just found this place really fascinating. And I've heard so many urban legends about this place over the years. I finally just wanted to sit down and do research and figure out what's real or just elaborate on a lot of this. And found stuff. In fact, the more I found it, I was just going to mention a few little things. And then it turned into, oh my God, here it's like the Moonies episode. It was going to be a short thing. And then found a lot. The history of Seoul Grand Park can be traced all the way back to a century ago. When during the Japanese occupation, one of the palaces, Cheonggyeonggung, part of it was converted into a zoo. Now, I didn't research closer, but I think I remember that there originally were a few exotic animals there, like a menagerie for the royalty already there. And the Japanese went the extra step and just converted it into a zoo and demoted the palace into a public park. And that zoo lasted until around 1980. And then that was the big sweep of rebuilding, restoring a lot of the Joseon era buildings, the palaces and such. So we're going to remove that zoo. And they found lots of places for the zoo, temporary places for the zoo. And just like the museums too, it's like the Seoul Museum, the National Museum, it kept moving to different places until they found a permanent house for it. But fast forward to the 1960s and a person named Kim Jae-chun. He was a critic of the dictator, Park Chung-hee, which we've talked about. But he kind of changed his mind in 1965 after he was imprisoned, kind of, you know, okay, let me out and I'll like you. All right. And so when he came out, Park Chung-hee saw that Kim Jae-chun already had a few assets. He had a feed factory, farms, ranches, forestries, a lot of agricultural related stuff. And so, Park Chung-hee started seeing him as a tool he could use to rebuild Korea, started directing a lot of bank loans towards him. And then Kim also felt that, oh, wow. Well, if I have assets, the more assets I have, the more likely I am to get more bank loans and stuff. So he started getting lots of stuff. He started buying some forest down in Gwacheon in 1967. In Gwacheon itself, what it was that Park Chung-hee was getting a little... He didn't trust the U.S. military a lot to protect South Korea from North Korea. He wanted to do something a little more independent, not rely on the U.S. so much. I mean, it was also a little more of a pride thing, I'm sure. So he wanted to be in control of South Korea's military. And so he directed Kim Jae-chun to buy all this land in Gwacheon. He directed all the money towards him from the banks, and he wanted to turn this into a secret research area for weapons. In fact, they were planning to build nuclear weapons at this site in Gwacheon. They changed their mind. They decided to move it to an area near Daejeon, and then the U.S. military started getting wind of this, and they pressured Park Chung-hee to abandon the whole project altogether, because it's kind of hard to defend your ally when your ally is waving nukes. Ask China. So Kim Jae-chun is stuck with all this land. He's like, okay, what do I do? Dude, you asked me to buy all this land, and now what? I'm stuck with all this land. So Park Chung-hee goes, well, why don't we just designate this as a citizen's park for Seoul? So that's what they did. And they thought, oh, wow, now they have all this land. Let's see if we can do some stuff with it. Now, a lot of stuff happens that Kim Jae-chun just has the worst luck when it comes to business. The oil crisis happened in the 70s, raising exchange rates. All of his businesses were hurting, so he couldn't repay the loans. So Park Chung-hee froze the repayments for a while. But then they just came up with this idea of just making this amazing park. Giant park. Now, the original plan was they were going to move the zoo there. So the National Zoo was going to be moved there. Then they thought, okay, we're going to make an amusement park, some children's amusement facilities. Then they thought, okay, well, why don't we have this? Why don't we make ski resorts there? And a golf course, 18-hole golf course, and hotels, and fishing grounds, and skating rinks, and boating grounds. Yeah. Yeah, they were thinking pretty highly
and
of
cotton candy.
All the stuff they really wanted to open over there. The Kim Jae-chun is making friends with Seoul's mayor, supporting him, but unfortunately the mayor changes, who doesn't support him, and so the Seoul strong arms him to give Seoul a portion of the land in exchange that they would cancel some of his debts. Groundbreaking happened in 1978. The agreements that I said that Kim Jae-chun had with the former mayors were not being upheld. So he ended up transferring most everything to the government. In exchange, he did get his debts repaid. And then he tried to sue the government 10 years later. It was still Chun Doo-hwan was in power still then. And he lost it. And then the land was just completely owned by the Seoul City government. So after they bought the land, I'm leading to something. There is something. I mean, I like to always think that since they originally were planning this as a nuclear testing facility or development facility, that there are secret underground bunkers at Seoul Grand Park. I like to believe that. I'm sure it's not true, but I would like to believe that was there. So the zoo finally was transferred in 1984. Of course, it had to be made slightly larger than Pyongyang Zoo. You see this when you go to, if you ever take the DMZ tour, you see this little slight one-upsmanship between Korea, North and South Korea. But in order to do any construction on the land itself, even though the land was already bought, it was still occupied by people. And interestingly enough, these people were followed Shinto, which is the Japanese indigenous religion. And an emerging new religion, you can say cult, called Jommak Songjon. And the speculation, this was the mother of Shincheonji, which figures into the coronavirus. Because that was the cult that first spread the virus in Daegu. They lost. I mean, they were pushed out. They still had a church there called the Gwacheon Isaac Church, which changed into the Isaac Central Church. The building is now a Presbyterian church called the Gwacheon Hope Church, in case you're in that area and you want to just see the stuff we're talking about. A lot of the people that lived in the area were just pushed into the apartments that Seoul built for them. So the zoo opened on May 1st, May Day, 1984. 3 months later, Seoul Grand Park Station opened. The opening ceremony, there were 750,000 people there. A few days later, Children's Day, 1 million people were estimated to be at the park. Right. If you've ever been to Seoul Grand Park, I mean, it's gorgeous. It's a huge tract of land that most of it is not used. It's just parkland. And there's a lake around it, and it's a reservoir. And you think that was built for the park, but actually it was a reservoir that was used for agriculture before they bought the land. And it's all the water. It collects all the waters from the mountain. The Seoul Land itself, which is an amusement park that out of the big three Seoul amusement parks, you know, there's Everland, Lotte World, and then there's Seoul Land. It's the, well, if you follow Hamilton, it's the Peggy. It's the Theodore, if you follow, of the chipmunks.
Okay.
Okay, how about that? I'm working on all my trinities.
Right. Going through all your things you can reference for help people understand.
Yeah, it's the ghetto of the three main amusement parks, but I just have a soft spot for this place. It's a lot like a Six Flags or some of the parks I went to in Europe where they try to theme it, but it's not that cohesive. I mean, you'll see on the map that, oh, this is supposed to be about traditional Korean culture, and it's okay, and they're selling kebabs.
There's a picture of Pinocchio or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. It's like,
but he's wearing a handbook, so it's okay.
Yeah, things like that.
Yeah.
Things like that. Yeah, some chili land. I remember that. Yeah. but I like it. I like that it has the mountain as the backdrop.
Chungi-san.
Yeah, the facades are really kind of cute. They try to make it a little bit like Epcot World Showcase. In fact, to the point that they have the sphere that's like Spaceship Earth in Epcot and Disney World. It is like I remember from a lot of European parks where they just try to rip off Disney as much as they could.
Those are common, I think, those spheres. There's one in Canada, at least one in Toronto. There's the CNE, the Canadian National Exhibition, and they have... they have a big sphere, like a
geodesic sphere. A lot of the rides, there's Japanese companies were doing the technology at the time because they felt that Korean technology was not up to snuff yet. And you could tell a lot of the rides were kind of bought off the shelf. They were kind of like, they bought it from a used rides car lot, you know, something like that. It's kind of sad, but kind of charming at the same time. I have a big thing for Seoul Land. So the location, it is next to the zoo with this hill dividing it. Originally Samsung was going to make it, but Dalian Industrial showed interest. At the time, they were the largest chaebol in Korea. There was a groundbreaking in winter 1984, but 8 months after they started, they ran out of money. And so Seoul City made a deal with whoever could take it over that Seoul would take care of the the utilities, the water, the sewage, the electricity, if someone else could just build the buildings and manage the park. So Haniel Construction took it over. They were a mid-sized company, but they did have amusement park construction experience. And so it was finished just in time for the 88 Olympics on May 11th, 1988. So anyway, the other things that happened, Seoul originally had a botanical gardens that was later moved to Seoul Grand Park in 1985. The National Museum of Modern Art was opened in 1986, which I think is now moved to Gwanghwamun. And I haven't been to it since it moved, but I liked it. I like the original. I like the original park, the original museum. It was nice on the hill, and it had the sculpture garden. It was fun, and lots of other stuff. If you go to Seoul Grand Park now, you come out of the station, and you walk this big boulevard with all these ladies selling silkworm larvae. It reeks of silkworm larvae and burnings and grilled dried squid, which smells exactly like burning hair.
I love that stuff though, with a beer.
I do. Oh, what's funny is I like all that. I like the silkworm larvae.
I saw your video when the first time you tried it in Sokcho.
Yes. Oh my God. You saw that? Oh wow. You've been stalking me.
Well, you put it on Facebook like a year ago or something.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, yeah. That's a much thinner, younger Joe. And still, I like it. I developed a taste for it. I like it. But you go through this boulevard, but I'm thinking of foreigners who are not familiar with these smells or are. It's not a pleasant experience if you're not accustomed to it. And then you go to this grand building that's abandoned. That's the entrance to the park. It's this big building. And they didn't even bother to pretty it up. You can see like furniture and boxes stacked up against the windows in this building, or this dead building there. And it's a beautiful, to go to Seoul Grand Park, you have to go all the way to the other side of the park. I mean, to go to Seoul Land and the zoo, you have to go to the back of it, go around the lake. There's a beautiful rose garden. There's now a gondola that you can take over there, a sky gondola. I just love walking the perimeter of the park. It's just really nice. But this is what's really interesting. This is why I kind of wanted to do this, because I sometimes mention this on my tour when we have some extra time, is that there was a rumor that in the mid 2000s, Disney was interested in opening a Disneyland Seoul at Seoul Grand Park. And people said, no, that's not true. And a lot of people denied it. And then I did some research and I actually found the news articles, and it's true, but it's not what you think it was. So Disney, I'll see if I could post it on our website and stuff. I found a proposed map of where everything was supposed to be. They were going to build a Disneyland pretty right over the right where the reservoir is and where Seoul Land is, and then where the zoo is, they were going to build hotels and hotel resorts. They were going to build resorts in where the zoo is now. Fascinating how they were planning to do this. And so it was around early 2005 that even in the LA Times that they were predicting to do this. And so they were in talks with all these officials. I knew people who said they were in these meetings. So that's, they were able to confirm this back then when I was trying to research this rumor. And so they asked for two major concessions. They were planning to open in 2011. They said they wanted to relocate the National Museum of Modern Art, which they did, and relocate the zoo to either Jangjidong or Seocho Wangjidong in Songpa-gu. So eastern Seoul, around where Olympic Park is. The people who owned the business that owned Seoul Land at the time, or that was operating it, they filed a lawsuit. Surprise, surprise. But turns out this was a ruse. This is the same thing Disney did when it was building Euro Disney. Euro Disney is outside Paris, France. But people don't know, a lot of people don't remember that there was a bidding war between France and a place in Spain to open European Disney. And Michael Eisner was pitting the France versus Spain and bidding for it. And so that was how Disney was able. So Disney was really trying to, they originally really wanted to do it in France, but they went and started courting Spain in order to get France to go, oh crap, we need to, you know, we need to negotiate better to give concessions. Well, at the time, Disney was looking to open a new Asia park and they eyed Shanghai. And so they did the same tactic where they were saying Shanghai was not going along with everything that Disney was wanting in the negotiations. So Disney started courting Seoul about opening a Disneyland there in order to get Shanghai to agree to all of their, what they wanted.
Stipulations.
Stipulations is the word I'm looking for. And so pretty sure, it's pretty positive, Disney had no intentions of actually building a park in Seoul. That it was, Seoul was just a pawn in Disney's game. And it makes me sad.
Disney's evil, man.
It makes me sad. I think that was the early, that was right when Eisner left, 2005. That's when Bob Iger took over, was 2005. So I think it was started under Eisner and then Iger took it over around then. So, Maureen Sire said, as soon as Shanghai said yes, all talks with Seoul shut down. And that was it. So, yes, the rumor was true. The urban legend was true that there was a planned Disneyland Seoul at Seoul Grand Park. But it was a ruse. And there we go.
Just to get Shanghai to agree.
Yeah. And Seoul Grand Park was originally a nuclear development facility. I love there that you one. Go. A military weapons facility. I love right. that one.
Whee!
I love it. I love it. Okay. So if you're a theme park nerd like I am, I hope you enjoyed this.
Yeah.
Or you can see my, you can understand my appreciation for Seoul Grand Park and Seoul Land and everything there. I really, it's just a special place in my heart. I need to drive out there again sometime.
There's something almost inherently creepy about amusement parks and theme parks. Even like not even ones that are abandoned, ones that are at night, say.
Mm-hmm.
Even film probably has a lot to do with that. Movies depicting, going right back to Freaks movie.
Oh, yeah.
The Todd Browning film from the early 1930s. Great film.
All the way to Zombieland.
All the way to Zombieland, yeah. Or even more recently, there's one called, what is it, Hellfest? I think it's Hellfest.
Mm.
And then there are movies, horror movies, that are set around haunted houses.
I was going to say, Hellfest sounds like a Christian haunted house.
Yeah, Carnival of Souls from the 60s, probably the greatest, one of the greatest American independent horror films. There's something.
And there's a movie with Kiss in an amusement park.
Oh, yeah.
Really? Yeah. I think you saw Gene Simmons do karate in it. I saw the movie when I was 3 years old. That's what my memory says, but it does exist.
Yeah, Gene Simmons just wanted money, man. That's all he wanted. He's just looking for a buck. Yeah. There's just something, just creepy. House of 1,000 Corpses, the roadside attractions. That's all, you know, it's all related.
Every other episode of Scooby-Doo.
There you go. Yeah. And we love the Scooby-Doo. My daughter's really into Scooby-Doo now. Mm. She loves it. The cartoons. We're reading a couple comics. There's a new comic series. That's out now, 99 cents an issue. And I found a bunch of the old Scooby-Doo, Where Are You?
Mm-hmm.
And she watched the movies too.
Which is your era of Scooby-Doo that you really like?
Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? The original from the 60s.
Okay. Yeah. The one I liked is, this is how I am. I'm gutter. I like the one where there's always a celebrity guest on it with Don Knotts on it.
Donuts or something. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. With Batman as well. They team up with Batman
Mama,
and Robin.
Mama Cass.
You're right. They were good though. No, those are great too. There's no era that a lot of people really crap on the era with Scrappy. Scrappy Doo. I loved Scrappy Doo growing up.
I'm in between on that one. I mean, he's kind of like the Ewok. Ewoks of Scooby Doo.
There will be no bad mouthing of the Ewoks when.
Well,
Manta
that's what I'm
died,
saying. It depends on when you were born, is yeah. whether or not you like the Ewoks. Could and be. I'm in between on that one.
Yeah. I was a little kid when I saw that.
Yeah,
I was probably 5 when I saw Return of the Jedi.
And I was 8, so I was just exiting the age where Ewoks would be considered cute or cool.
Right. I thought they were awesome. I still do. When Nanta died, when Nanta gets shot and he's killed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's the saddest death.
I can hear the music right now, right when that happens. Yeah. I'm playing Star Wars Battlefront 2, and you can play an Ewok in it, and they kick ass.
Nice. There should be an Ewok. Does Disney have a Star Wars theme park yet?
Yes. 2 of them.
They do. 2 of them. Okay, there you go. It's got to be Ewok somewhere in those.
There's a map. If you play the Ewok, there's a map that's like, it's done like a horror, on Battlefront 2, I think you'd appreciate it. It's done like a horror movie. Where either you're a stormtrooper on Endor trying to get to your ship to be rescued, or you're an Ewok hunting the stormtrooper down in the dark.
Nice.
You're in the dark. So you're in the stormtrooper, and you can't see where you are. It's black. You only have like a gun and a flashlight. And you can only see where you're going if you use the flashlight. But if you use the flashlight, the Ewok can see you. It's really good. It's a really good hide and seek map.
It's like Silent Hill, that game.
Yeah, yeah. It's like those types of games, but where you can actually play the monster role in this one. It depends. Right. It's scary. And the sound they have in this, because it's night creature sounds. It's just loud. All the crickets and frogs and everything in your ears is deafeningly loud. So I played it as both the Ewoks and the Stormtrooper, and the Stormtrooper one. You're in the dark, and I just decided to just go in the dark, and just any snapped twig, I'm turning around. What was that? It's really engrossing. Well done. It's a well done map.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Sorry.
Our Star Wars. Right? I think we've mentioned Star Wars to some degree in almost every episode.
It's going to be that way. Get used to
it. It's going to be like, you know, James Rolfe, the angry video game nerd.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I love him.
Yeah. Yeah. I love him. I've been following his show since 2004, I guess, when he started doing
them. I think me too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So. One of the earliest popular YouTubers, still running, still great.
Wow.
He does a show with his buddy, Mike Matei.
Uh-huh.
And they do James and Mike Mondays, and they play a game, and they film them. It's kind of like us, where we're kind of just, we have a point, where our point is the topic of each episode. of the podcast, but we go on these tangents. So they have a point where they play this one specific game, but they go on, but they go on tangents. Oh, they don't edit it out. So they, but every episode they bring up The Legend of Zelda inadvertently as well. It just comes up. Huh. So I think that's Star Wars for us.
I can totally do that with Star Wars anytime.
Yeah.
At least I don't bore you with all my. I can go on Disney Park stuff, but I know that would bore you.
Any haunted ones? So, well, you think Disney Parks were the catalyst for you starting the Dark Side of Soul tour?
It was how I patterned it. I patterned mine kind of out of the Jungle Cruise script. The dad jokes and all that stuff. The corny stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you like the dad joke that I sent you this morning?
I loved it. Make every second count.
Yeah, yeah. It's great.
All right. So, everyone, thank you for listening to the show.
That was a fun summertime show.
I'm pretty sure I've edited this part out, so you missed out on... If you're a patron, you hear this whole conversation about Star Wars and Disney parks and
horror movies,
Scooby-Doo, stuff like that. We'll see how much I keep in. but we want to thank We want to thank you for listening. We want to thank our patrons, Angel Earl, Joel Bonamini, Jamie Staley, Sharon Cullen. They're our top tier patrons. You can become a patron too. Go to patreon.com/darksideofsoul. And just $5 a month, you can get all this extra content, including video versions of the podcast. Sean makes extra material, weird tales.
Weird tales and letters from the weird tales from Korean lore and letters from the dead, the newest one.
You can also get music from Sorak-san, who makes our music for the show. You can also find him under his label, Jeju Digital on Bandcamp. I don't ask this a lot. This could really help. We've gotten a big surge in listeners lately. It's been great. I did notice if you listen to us on Apple Podcast or on Stitcher or on Spotify, if you wouldn't mind, go ahead and just like put a rating and a review for us. The algorithm helps. It helps. It helps. It
really does.
A lot. It would be helpful. I mean, if you know, it just helps. It just helps. What also helps, if you join us for the Dark Side of the Soul Ghost Walk at darksideofsoul.com, you can book. Have a good time with either Sean or me. Mm-hmm. Or if you hate the show, you can book the tour and punch me in the face. That's fine.
I don't want that. Please don't book my tour.
All right, everyone, thank you for listening. Until next time, stay spooky.
Good night.